Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Ready for another week of Penn State football talk, Andy?
Yes, always, Jimmy. It's football season. Let's talk about anything football. Oh, this is Keystone Sports Network is about Penn State. All right, let's talk Penn State football. That sounds good to me, Jimmy. Sign me up. How do I get in on that?
All right. Well, you're automatically in, Andy. We're talking Penn State football. We're going to start with just getting the final takeaways from that game last week, Penn State against Kent State. We knew going in this was a mismatch. Kent State, one place listed them as the worst team in college football, 134th out of 134 teams. That seems to be the case, Andy. It was a 56-0 whitewash. And first of all, Andy,
yes.
what was your call on that game? What was your prediction for the score?
55-0.
So you missed it.
I missed it.
It was 56-0. So you, my friend, were wrong.
Price is Right rules. I'm closest because I didn't go over.
one point under. Very good call. This was a Kent State team that was obviously overmatched. Didn't get any better, Andy, when they lost not just their starting quarterback, but their backup quarterback also. But it doesn't mean that we can't have some takeaways from this game. Things that we learned about this Penn State team, both on the positive side, negative side. What do you got?
So I'll start with a couple things. I'll start with one on each side of the ball. I'm going to take something. This grabbed me from the game because of the way the offense continues to perform, kind of. And it was one Drew Aller said after the game, quote, "I would definitely say my confidence is at an all-time high since I've been here." Remember we talked about him ending last season and going into the offseason. Now, with a new offensive coordinator, he was lacking confidence. And he even said that. He said, having that experience from last year was helpful, and I learned a lot in my first year starting. He said, I wasn't as good as I thought I was. I learned a lot, and I had lost my confidence. Basically, he was saying that is what he took away from it and how he feels now. That's really important because it was never about can this kid, you know, deliver the throws in the tough spots? Is he, you know, football savvy? None of that was in question. And he's quietly one of the top five quarterbacks in the country, in my opinion. Very, very quietly, Jimmy. Very quietly being that. And I don't mean he's being disrespected or overlooked or any of that garbage. He's just quietly been very, very efficient and effective. That stood out to me from Drew Aller's standpoint, and it's a reflection of what you see on the field, right? Like, are you what you're being told, what you're seeing, is it a reflection on the field? Yeah. The other was, and I'm sorry, I know they were down, you know, two quarterbacks and they were down in the third string. That record, Jimmy, 70 whatever yards it was, however many yards they gave up, was the fewest ever, you know, it set some kind of record that was nearly 100 years old or something. Still impressive that they played like that for four quarters all the way through. First team, second team, third team, backups, you know, mixing and matching this and that as they did defensively throughout the game. That stood out to me. Those were a couple of the positives that I grabbed from it right away. Your quarterback is confident and your defense is still pretty darn good.
And the idea of starting with, you know, Drew Aller and his confidence level, Andy, I think is the exact right place to start with this team and this offense. Going into this game, what we wanted to see from the offense, we knew they would be able to put up a lot of yards. You were grasping for the exact number. It was 718 yards that they put up. 409 passing, 309 yards rushing the ball.
Right.
But the efficiency with which they performed. Drew Aller was 17 for 21 for 309 yards. That's the kind of game that you want every game to be that way. And he did it in just a little more than a half. And when you talk about him, where he stands nationally among quarterbacks, there's not going to be the gaudy numbers that you see from some other quarterbacks. The most, he is 41 of 58 on the season. Okay. That's almost 71%, which is fantastic. But I think what's interesting, Andy, is 58 attempts through three games. You know what that means? He's thrown the ball less than 20 times a game.
Yeah. This offense is built around the running backs, not running the ball per se, Jimmy. They're not like a, they're not a running offense. They're a very diverse, multiple offense. But the offense is built around the running backs and the tight ends. It's not, they are hitting explosive plays down the field because of the offense being effective and working efficiently in what the focus of it is. But this offense is not built to be down the field, hitting Amari Evans three times a game for, you know, 105 yards receiving and two touchdowns. That's not going to happen like that every game. But there will be plenty of opportunities as long as the offense continues to function this way. I don't see a change, Jimmy. And the less of Drew Aller, the better off this offense is. And I don't mean that the less Drew Aller has on his – on his plate, the less Drew Aller's throwing the football, the more efficient he is and confident as a quarterback in exactly what they're doing. Defenses can't balance that. Which way are they going, right? Where are they going and what are they doing? They have the ability to sort of yank a defense's chain, I like to say. They get to play the one, I'm going to pull you this way or I'm going to pull you this way. What are you going to do? They have that ability as an offense. And it's very, very efficient. And Drew Aller is very confident right now. That is a huge factor, I agree.
And a confident Drew Aller doesn't just mean when he's throwing the ball, Andy. I've often talked about his ability to run the ball, and he's got to at least show that. He's now showing it. And what I think is the most important aspect of it when he's running the ball is how he's doing it so decisively. Yep. He's quick in making his decisions, and we could really tell the difference. Now, Andy, yep, you still got to talk, you know, a couple negatives with this team. I'll hit on the penalties. Boy, I hate starting the game by kicking the ball out of bounds.
Yeah, I mean, it feels nitpicking when you win 56-0 and do all that, but they have been, you know, one thing about James' teams that, you know, that win 10 and 11 games in a year, they weren't teams that, you know, sort of shot themselves in the foot. And the penalties haven't hurt them, right? Like the penalties in the Kent State game were not impact penalties, right? But they have been consistently a little more penalized team, per se, than most James Franklin teams at Penn State. So it's something to watch out for as the games get bigger and the stakes get higher. Hello, this week, a ranked opponent, albeit Illinois, it's a ranked opponent, higher level, higher game. What does it look like in that situation when those kind of stakes? I think that will show, but yeah, kicking the ball out of bounds is not a good way to start.
And that one wasn't a terrible one, but what concerns me, Andy, and this goes back prior to the Kent State game, when you have a holding that negates a third down completion that would have been a first down, now you're facing third and 20, and that's the way you stop your team. Or defensively, you jump off sides and give a team a third and one instead of a third and six. Those are the things that they have to clean up. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Andy, because it's interesting this – and predictable to hear fan reaction. In the game against Kent State, they put in the first half, while Drew Aller was still in the game, they brought in Bo Prabula, the quarterback. They a little late. They also brought in Tyler Warren to take a couple snaps. Right. Wildcat. And I have fans saying, Drew Aller is so hot. Why are you taking him out to put Bo Prabula in? What I find fascinating is they had an issue with Bo Prabula in there because he threw an interception.
Right.
They had no issue with Tyler Warren going in there because he threw a touchdown pass. So, Andy, I'll just ask you, some of this with Andy Kotelnicki, where he does a few of these interesting non-standard things, how do you look at it? Is it getting a little too cute, or are you happy that they're showing those things?
I like they're showing them. I think I'm a big proponent of, you know, Bo Prabula is an asset and a weapon in this offense. And I think you got to keep using him. I'm like, get him in the game, right? Like, I was glad to see him in the game. I don't care if he threw an interception. I want to see him throw the ball on a little bit more consistent basis. The Tyler Warren thing, I don't mind Tyler in the Wildcat. I don't know why you would unveil that against Kent State. To me, it feels like a one-off. Like, why would you show that when you really, really didn't need to? I think it was more for fun and window dressing on what they're really going to do as a big-time change-up in this offense. And it might be in the Wildcat, but I don't think we want lefty number 44 throwing too many more passes, Jimmy. It's just – it's not good. Like, okay, he threw a touchdown pass, but, okay, no more. Like, no, it's not good. That will end poorly for Penn State against a quality opponent. But I think Andy Kotelnicki's got more tricks up his sleeve. Absolutely.
Well, I'm of the mind, Andy, that – show some of this stuff, even if it's against Kent State. Make the defense have to take a look at it. And even if you have in your head, hey, Tyler Warren's never going to throw a pass again out of the Wildcat, you showed that, hey, we're willing to do that. We're willing to let him pass the ball. So when you see Tyler Warren come in the Wildcat, you can't just automatically on defense say, oh, he's running the ball. You know, Was it Tommy Stevens who, when he came in, he, I believe, 17 times in a row, he ran the ball when he came in. Now, he's effective doing it, but the defense pretty much knew what was coming. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter number one. We got lots more to go. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football and college football in general this segment, Andy, because there is a lot going on in the college football world. I'm not sure there's ever been a season with so much change going on. We have, first of all, the expansion to 12-team playoffs.
Right.
Realignment, teams changing conferences. There's so much of that going on. And, oh, by the way, we have some great games on the field. There were some really interesting games last week. And the biggest ones was, first of all, Michigan playing USC. This is USC's first game as a Big Ten member. And Michigan said, hey, USC, welcome to the Big Ten and our style of play.
Yeah, Michigan was – they got the game in the sandbox that Michigan can be effective at. I give the Wolverines full credit and, you know, Sharon and the coaching staff, the way they they sort of made USC play their game. USC made some great adjustments and tried to, you know, get the game more what USC wanted. But in the end, right, at the end of the day, at a much higher level, and we knew the questions going into this year were about USC's defense, right? It had showed some, we're a little bit bigger, a little bit better, a little bit stronger. We can hold up. They couldn't hold up for, excuse me. They couldn't hold up for 60 minutes against Michigan. At the end of the day, in the fourth quarter, Michigan was the more physical, stronger team. The USC defense, they weren't ready. They weren't ready for that level. They held up for a good long while, and they gave USC a chance to sort of pull the game out of reach a little bit and make Michigan really uncomfortable. They couldn't do it, and at the end of the day, Michigan's offense executed and, you know, sort of basically took the ball right down the field against USC. It just showed that it's a little bit different. You hit the nail on the head. Welcome to Big Ten football Michigan style, because that's exactly what you're going to get.
And, you know, Andy, this game was so symbolic of so many things that are going on. The conference realignment, as we had USC joining the Big Ten. What it also did was talked about, and to me, the message was about, with now the 12-team playoff, where we battled the entire offseason over, oh, does this diminish the value of the regular season? And my feeling was, no, no, not at all. If anything, more games will be important because more games are playoff worthy. And you had a situation here in this game that Michigan, they needed this game to get back into the playoff picture.
Relevant, yeah. Completely relevant, yeah.
USC, this did not eliminate them.
Nope.
But boy, if they had won, it really would have given them a lot of margin to play with.
Yeah, it was a – I said it last week that I thought Michigan needed the game more than USC did. And turns out, you know, that the way the game played out, it has benefited them more. But, you know, they have a little bit – Michigan has a little bit tougher road ahead of them still. You know, they've still got Ohio State and Oregon to play. USC was, you could argue, the, you know, not the strongest of the strong Big Ten teams. Those two are still on Michigan's schedule. So to keep themselves relevant in this, they had to win this game. I just thought it was an impressive win. I didn't think USC played, quote unquote, poorly. I just don't think they were able to match Michigan physically when it mattered. That was it. That was the difference between the two teams, Jimmy. To me, other than that, I think it was, you know, pretty much a toss-up game all the way until it came down to say, okay, are you big enough, strong enough, and tough enough? USC wasn't. End of story for me.
And Michigan learned this is how they could win games. Also, Andy, you mentioned Michigan's schedule. I think it's worthwhile looking at USC's schedule going forward. Obviously, they have a game with Penn State in a couple weeks. We all know about that. But you know what they don't have? They don't have Oregon, and they don't have Ohio State.
Still relevant. On the fringe, but still relevant. Penn State game. Guess what? They're going to go into the Penn State game if Penn State's undefeated, for example, say, right? They navigate their schedule. That game's going to mean way more to USC in terms of one team winning and one team losing. It'll be that balance. USC will be wearing a shoe on the other foot.
And if they don't lose between now and then, same thing with Penn State, if that game goes in, USC, a one-loss USC, you're right. USC wins that game. They've got to look at the rest of their schedule and say, hey, this is all manageable. Maryland, Rutgers, Washington, Nebraska, and UCLA. We could run that schedule. So I'm going to reiterate my feeling on this 12-team playoff, which is I love it, Andy. I love it. I love how it makes so many more games relevant. Now, we had that game in the Big Ten, new member, USC, playing someone from the old guard, Michigan. Southeast Conference had something similar. The newbie being Oklahoma, they were up against Tennessee. Now, Tennessee isn't the Alabama, Georgia type top, very top of the Southeast Conference, but Tennessee had showed themselves to be a pretty good team. This was an opportunity for Tennessee to announce that they're for real. And Oklahoma had the chance to say, hey, we're new to the Southeast Conference, but we're prepared to compete. Again, Andy, it was the old guard Tennessee.
I think Tennessee is knocking at that door that you were talking about, Jimmy, of like, you know, are they the Georgia? Hey, we're knocking at the door here. Their defense, particularly that defensive line, was a little bit jaw-dropping to me. They're very good. Here's the interesting thing about that game I'll take away from. Oklahoma, I think Tennessee got Oklahoma's pretty much their best shot. Oklahoma did not play a poor football game. Right, Oklahoma did not underperform, sort of hand the game to Tennessee. It was a dominating performance by Tennessee that didn't dominate, show itself on the scoreboard per se. But if you watched 6 or 8 or 10 minutes of that game, it was Tennessee giving Oklahoma absolutely no say in the outcome. Not an easy thing to do. Particularly if Oklahoma was not playing poorly, not shooting themselves in the foot, making turnovers, you know, mistakes and penalties and giving the opponent first downs and stuff like that. They didn't play poorly, and they had no say in the outcome. Tennessee's knocking at the door, and they just solidified the SEC in terms of the depth, in my opinion. And as you look at, you know, what are the top 10 teams in the country, Tennessee's makes the SEC even deeper and stronger.
Well, Andy, I always felt with the Southeast Conference, we felt pretty confident Georgia and Alabama at the top and Texas.
Yes.
Okay. And Texas confirmed that they do belong there. And I always felt it's like, okay, that next level in the Southeast Conference, we talk about teams like Tennessee, Ole Miss, Missouri. The question be LSU.
Correct.
You know, who was going of that group? I felt somebody was going to show themselves as the next guy who belongs in that upper tier. It really appears that Tennessee is going to be the team. And I think people who just watch, and I'll include myself in this group, I've thought of Tennessee as a team that's going to put up big numbers on offense. Josh Heupel, the coach, he's going to be about putting up points on the scoreboard. So I was very surprised to find out Tennessee has a really good defense and they won there. Now, speaking of the Southeast Conference, Andy, looking at the most recent AP poll, the Southeast Conference has 5 of the top 6 teams. That may settle out a little bit as they play each other and beat up on each other a little bit. But we get to see this coming week Alabama hosting Georgia, which, Andy, for years, the Southeast Conference has been protecting those two teams from playing each other in the regular season. If the new teams coming in does nothing but allow those two teams to play in the regular season, I'm all for it. Absolutely huge game. These are the games that I love in college football.
This is a college football playoff semifinal caliber game in September. That's what the 12-team college football playoff gets you in the regular season, and that's what conference realignment has done, right? SEC is one of the power two. SEC, Big Ten. You got Georgia and Alabama. How many times have they played in the SEC championship game? How many times have they been in the 14 college football playoff? Have they been one of the two teams you talked about that could win a national title? Almost annually, right? At least for the last six, seven years, right? Those are one of those two teams. Now they get to play each other in September. Hello, this is a change in college football. This is change, Jimmy, because they didn't play each other before because they couldn't afford it in the SEC to play each other and still be relevant, completely relevant as both of them in the 14 college football playoff. Now they can. That's why this is great, Jimmy. That's why I think it's great. And you get to enjoy. I thought Oklahoma and Tennessee, not quite as marquee, still a great matchup.
You know, Andy, what's interesting is those who will argue that, you know, 12 teams is too many, they'll say what the issue is here. In previous seasons, a game like this might have been a playoff elimination game, and it would have raised the stakes. I don't care. I still think that it's an important game. It will still mean a lot. Doesn't mean the same as it would have a year ago. No, but I'm okay with that. Give me more Alabama versus Georgia.
Yeah, give me more. And here's the thing. The loser of this game, where are they going? Nowhere in terms of the national rankings and their perspective. Nothing's going to change for either team based on the outcome other than, oh, by the way, Alabama beat Georgia or Georgia beat Alabama.
Real quick, who do you like in that game?
I like Alabama right now. Right now. I think Georgia needs better play from his quarterback. If they get it, they're going to win the game. But right now, I think Alabama's playing a little, just a little bit better. But, man, big game Georgia, Kirby, give me the Bulldogs.
I still look at Georgia as the king of the hill right now till someone knocks them off. That could very well be Alabama. All right, Andy, that is it for quarter number two. Guess what? Quarter number three, we're going to actually do Ask Andy this week. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. And this week, again, Andy, what it's supposed to be, quarter three is Ask Andy. For those of you who missed the show last week, and by the way, why in the world did you miss the show? Come on. We expect you here every week. But I screwed up. I didn't prepare the Ask Andy questions. I didn't have my act together last week. Andy, I've got the questions. We're ready to go. Let's start with our good friend Jimmy from Forest City, who says, "Dear Andy, after no catches for Liam Clifford in the first two games, it was nice to see him get three catches, 64 yards, and a touchdown. But was this result due to the opponent, Kent State, or a true breakthrough that we can expect more of against formidable opponents?" And he gave me an extra bonus question. Georgia-Alabama will be on at the same time as Penn State-Illinois game next weekend. Which game are you watching, Andy?
Both. I will have two TVs going because I stream, and a laptop. I might be watching three games, or I might have one in a quad box because you get the quad box on YouTube TV where there's four games in one box.
Yep.
That might be on the smaller TV. The big screen TV will have the Penn State game, and I'll probably have the Alabama-Georgia game on my laptop sitting on my lap. So,
gotta have it all, Andy. Gonna have it all.
So, to answer Jimmy's question, you know, do I think it's a one-off? Maybe the opponent, yeah. You know, the amount of yards. Look, there's a window and sort of a route tree that I think Andy knew about and will use for Liam Clifford. There's like four or five routes that he runs exceptionally well and that he's available for. And I just think Penn State tried to make sure they are using those, right? The other thing was, you know, Julian Fleming had one catch going in this game. Just get him a few more targets and get them going in a little bit different direction. It's pretty clear that wide receiver two, wide receiver three, you can talk about it all you want. They're not going to make it a high, high priority for this offense. They're going to look elsewhere first to butter their bread, but they're going to use it if they can. And if the player presents himself and puts themselves in a good situation. So I still think one or two, I'd say in a game, a good effective passing game, if, say, Julian Fleming and Lee and Clifford combine for 3 to 5 catches, that's a pretty good night against any opponent. You know, 50, 60, 70 combined yards. Maybe a touchdown, maybe not. They don't seem like touchdown getters. But, you know, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, and one of those guys catching a pass, that's important for this offense.
And, you know, Andy, I'm going to point out something I did point it out earlier in the first quarter. Drew Aller has only thrown 58 passes through 3 games.
Right.
He has 41 completions, which is better than 70% through 3 games. If I do my math there a little bit, Andy, through 3 games, that's comes out to a total of about 13 completions per game. All right. If you're only getting 13 completions per game and you've got to feed Trey Wallace, you got to feed Tyler Warren, you got to feed the running backs also who are part of this. By the time you get to Liam Clifford, Omari Evans, Julian Fleming, there's not a whole lot left there, Andy. So the numbers aren't going to be what you want. But what I liked in that Kent State game, whether just by circumstance or by intention, they did distribute the ball to more people. They got Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming involved. So now when you can't say, oh, I could just defend this team by defending Trey Wallace among the wide receivers, and somehow I managed to go through this without mentioning Omari Evans. So I'm not that concerned about the few number of receptions and targets that Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming have gotten, Andy.
No, me neither. Look, the way it's shaken out for me after 3 games, clearly Trey Wallace is your wide receiver 1. Omari Evans is your deep threat, right? Like, that's what the kid is. I think he's like 2nd in the country in yards per catch average, right? He's your explosive play guy. You have to defend the field deep against him. What Liam Clifford and Julian Fleming are your alternative options based on what the defense is giving you. Because you're 100% right. Running backs, Tyler Warren, wide receiver 1. Higher priority.
All right. Let's go to Steve in Columbia who says, I just get the feeling after 3 games this team is not a mean, nasty, physical team on both sides of the ball that can withstand a Big Ten season beginning with Illinois. Illinois is good and tough. We are good. Not sure how tough. Convince me I'm wrong because they've looked way too soft and flashy to me.
Yeah, the modern game is a little bit more flashy. That's interesting, Steve. I never watched Penn State this year and thought of them as soft or not tough. You know, I guess he says they're not tough. Kind of say, are they not physical? Are they soft? I'm not necessarily seeing that or would agree with that. I think West Virginia kind of tested them a little bit. I think Bowling Green put them in an uncomfortable position, right? And they had to respond. That shows some toughness to me. Physically, are they overwhelming? I don't know. I think the defensive front's pretty darn physical. Physical, fast, and explosive. Strong up the middle. Dangerous on the outside. I'm not seeing it. I rarely will say this, but Steve, we must be watching something different. I'm not seeing much of that. And I have a hard time saying that I have.
I'm going to throw a bit of a theory out here on why Steve says it that way. Now, first of all, on offense, if you're going to say this year's team is too flashy, well, keep giving me flashy. I like it with the explosive plays. If what you want on offense for toughness is a, you know, a 3 yards and a cloud of dust type team, like what you saw from Michigan, hey, I'll take Penn State's offense over that. But here's my theory on defense, why Steve may be going this route. A year ago, we saw so many defensive plays where you know, Penn State's attacking, blitzing from everywhere, and you get a defender with a free shot at the quarterback, and you come in untouched, and you just nail the quarterback. It sure looks like you're a tough team when you get those free hits, Andy, and we haven't seen that yet from Penn State. I don't think that means they're less physical. I think it just means they haven't gotten those wonderful highlight hits that, hey, Steve, you're not the only one who likes them. I like seeing those also, but that's not what we've seen too much of so far. It'll be fun. Illinois will give Penn State's defense an opportunity to be tough and physical. So I think we're going to learn a lot more about that, Steve, come Saturday. All right, Andy, there's a question for me. Curtis from Allport says, my question is actually for Jim. Jim, what are your thoughts on Berwick High School's first 0-4 start since the 70s? And where can someone find Jim at a Berwick game to talk football? Well, first of all, this Curtis's question came in last week when, yes, my beloved Bulldogs were 0-4. But they've begun the turnaround, Andy. They won this past weekend. They won big, 48-7, which was nice to see because in the first four games, they've scored a total of 24 points in four games, Andy. It's a new regime at Berwick. I don't know if you knew this, but C.J. Curry has taken over the team. He is the grandson of legendary coach George Curry, who was at Berwick for so many years. Berwick needed kind of a reboot. Hopefully this will be the start of that. I wouldn't read too much into how this season has begun. I'm looking long range at this Berwick program. And Curtis, you say, where can someone find Jim at a Berwick game? I got to admit, I haven't been to a Berwick game in a few years, Andy. It's just tough that Friday night when I'm typically getting ready for a Saturday Penn State game, it's tough for me to get out to high school football. I know you're a big high school football guy. Do you still get out on Friday nights to games?
I do occasionally. Yeah. I've gotten out twice this year in the first 5 weeks. So I still get out a little bit, not quite as much as I used to, but I still get out and enjoy it.
All right, let's go to Paul in Ebensburg, who says, what does whiteout energy mean?
Ooh.
This is, by the way, for those who don't know, James Franklin's press conference last week. He had fun with it, Andy. Some people didn't like it, but he did the, well, here's your headline, guys. For this coming week, I'm looking for whiteout energy. You know, he put that pause there. There's no, it's not an official whiteout. But come on, Paul, you know what it means. He's asking you to give it, wear white and show the energy.
It means have fun all day, lights on, noise up. That's my best way to describe it. Have fun all day, and because it means extended tailgating, lights on, night game, noise way up. And it does impact an opposition, particularly through the early stages of a game. How is Illinois going to handle it if Penn State can create that after dark atmosphere that they're very well known for? It starts, I think, with enjoying yourself all day. That's just my two cents.
Well, Andy, just as an insight here, Jim is prepared to enjoy himself all day. We're going to have a tailgate. We're going to be enjoying the Revel XP, folks, that we talk about a lot. We have a tent over there. We are going to have a great time all day. That's what we're having some folks in who have not been to a Penn State game before. So we're excited about that. And, you know, I get some people didn't like it. Andy, I loved it. I loved what James Franklin said and did. That's him saying, you know what, the Penn State fans, they're part of this story, part of the team. Get yourself involved, be loud, affect the opposition. Andy, that's the Penn State experience. Let's hear it. Wear white, Wear white. All right, that's it for quarter number three. We got another segment to go. Stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We're going to start looking forward now, Andy. Saturday night, two ranked teams, Penn State and a ranked undefeated Illinois team. Just another reminder, you got to wear white. It's not an official whiteout, but you heard it from Coach James Franklin, whiteout energy. All right, Andy, this Illinois team, how good are they?
So, I don't know. I think they played really well on the road against Nebraska last Friday. Here's what I will say. The four interception Luke Altmyer, who struggled to complete passes last year against Penn State's defense, this is not the same quarterback. So there's, you know, Drew Aller versus Luke Altmyer, right? Both Luke is playing as good a football as he transferred from Ole Miss. He's got 10 touchdowns, no interceptions. He's got like 850 yards. He had four touchdowns against Nebraska a week ago. He's taken care of the football. They're not going to get any help, I don't think, from the opposing quarterback when it comes to deciding the outcome of this game. That's you know, that's going to be part of this equation for me. And I obviously think at the same time, Illinois' defense is not going to get any help from Mr. Drew Aller the way he's playing football right now. So both teams have effective, confident, efficient. Both are completing like 71% of their passes. They're sort of playing the same game. You're going to get a good shot from the opposing quarterback. What about after that? Yeah, Illinois's got two good receivers. I would say their 1 and 2 receiver are better than the 1-2 for Penn State combo. Penn State's got a tight end to counter with. Those running backs, hint, hint, those running backs in this game, right? Penn State secondary, the secondary that's, you know, without KJ Winston, that's a big deal, Jimmy. It obviously is. And it might show up a little bit, you know. It's sort of like the question mark about it. How good is his secondary? You might be able to find out a little bit more about him on Saturday night. So that's where I start with this game in terms of what I'm looking for. And Illinois got confidence more than anything else. They believe they can come in and win this game after winning a week ago in a crazy atmosphere at Nebraska. In their minds, they're thinking, what's different about Penn State? Well, Penn State's a better football team.
That's the biggest difference. And here's the, you know, the couple thoughts from me on Illinois. Luke Altmyer, now, does he not have some Connor Bazelak feel to him? You know, that veteran quarterback who was transferred, maybe the light has come on for him. And, you know, that maturity will certainly help in this kind of environment on the road, like it did when they faced Nebraska. Illinois coach Brett Bielema, we all remember 9 overtimes. We remember Bielema coming in and just giving Penn State fits. Bielema is willing to set up a strategy for a specific game and stick to it. He has a game plan. Those things I see. I'm just wondering, you know, how much we could take from that Illinois beating Nebraska. Was Nebraska as good as we thought going in? Hey, I was sold on them. I picked Nebraska to win that game. I was buying in. But give Illinois credit. But this game also has the feel, Andy, to me of we see this often. The old Big Ten West teams coming into Penn State with confidence. Think I also have the vibes from Iowa from a year ago. Remember, Iowa, tough, strong nose, physical team. They're going to give Penn State fits. And Penn State still just dominated them. And I think in that second half, I'm not even sure Iowa got a first down. Andy, I said it a couple times. I'll say it again. They could still be playing that game 1 year later, and Iowa still would not be putting points on the board.
They got quarterback help. Iowa's quarterback play that game was atrocious. That's not going to be the case here. When you're talking to Brett about Brett and the way I like the way he coaches and I like the way he approaches, it's very basic, right? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a very good way, right? There, he plays to his strengths, you know, take care of the football. Don't turn it over. Force some turnovers, right? Generate a pass rush. Get after the other team's quarterback and get one or two or three big plays on both sides of the ball. Illinois plays like a veteran team, right? They don't get they won't get rattled per se. It's just, can they keep up? Can that sort of basic, you know, simple, effective approach work for 60 minutes? It worked for 60 minutes against Nebraska because I don't think Nebraska had the horsepower to force Illinois a little bit out of its comfort zone. That's going to be the onus on Penn State. Get Illinois out of its comfort zone and see if Illinois can go a little outside its box and still be a competitive, effective team for 60 minutes over the course of the game. If Penn State is, if this game is, the longer this game is closer and tight, the more dangerous it is for the Nittany Lions and the more effective and efficient and comfortable and confident Illinois will be. And I'm not saying Penn State's got to come out and drop a 27 bomb on Illinois in the first quarter to take this game. I'm just saying Penn State has to make sure that this doesn't fully look like what Illinois wants the game to look like in order to make Illinois uncomfortable. Otherwise, there's a really strong chance that they could lose this game.
And, you know, Andy, I think you bring up the good point about who's going to establish what kind of game this is going to be. And that's going to happen early. Could Illinois turn this into a – they want to reduce the number of possessions. They want the clock to just keep running. They want to get first down after first down, keep Penn State's offense off the field. And if they can get an early lead, they could establish that's the style of game this is going to be. But the exact opposite could also happen. If Penn State could come out quickly, as you said, they don't need to put up like a 20 spot right early to establish that. But if they score first, could establish something. By them, I mean the Penn State offense. All of a sudden, do you turn this game into, you know, Illinois having to play from behind? Illinois now having to play in front of a crowd that's going crazy if Penn State puts up some points early. So I think a fast start will make a huge difference for either team.
And I think this is a Penn State offense that can stretch this Illinois defense. That's the key matchup for me, is Penn State's offense against Illinois' defense, right? Penn State is one of the best teams in the country offensively in yards per completion, right? Like you talked earlier in the show about how few passes Drew Aller has thrown. And well, when he does complete a pass, he's getting some serious mileage out of it. So the way I think this is key is, you know, you got those two running backs. You know, Illinois can stack the box and then load up and sort of try and take those running backs, make them a little less more relevant part of the game. By the way, those two running backs, what are they averaging? Like combined 7 yards a carry right now? Hello, offensive line playing well. But then that opens up Drew Aller. They're hitting for big plays because teams are loading up and stretching against them, right? They're going to be tough, right? Illinois is going to make it difficult for Penn State. Can this offense stretch Illinois' defense and make them sort of push themselves in a different way and not sure which one is going to get them. That's where I think Penn State can be most effective. And I don't think it's going to, I don't completely disagree. Fast start for Penn State would be ideal. If it doesn't happen, I'm not that necessarily that concerned, because I think the way you beat Illinois is you have to play the long game, right? You beat them over, you just sort of lean on them and continue to make their defense work harder than it has to and be a little bit more uncomfortable. That's going to be really important for Penn State. You play the long game to beat Illinois because you have the better football team. That's how you beat a team that's comfortable and confident in its own skin right now.
Well, Penn State is better geared to play from behind than Illinois is. But I think, Andy, and this is relevant to me and some of our audience, what the point spread is, and people looked at that and said, wow, that's huge, which, by the way, is what I said also, Andy. And how could Penn State cover that? And I think it is about getting a quick start, and things could, you know, snowball from there. Let's talk about that spread, Andy, because we're going to need your prediction and your bold prediction. I was guessing maybe 8-9 point spread.
Right.
Some people, everyone I talked to said they thought maybe 8-9, 10 point spread. And it came out at 18 points, Andy, and it stayed there. It hasn't moved. So, Andy, I need your prediction and your bold prediction, knowing it's an 18-point spread.
Yeah, I think in some ways this might end up being kind of a boring game. Penn State's got some flash to it, right, offensively. I think it's a third down sort of moving the chains, sort of playing the long game efficient and effective. They take over in the second half and get some of those explosive plays because they've set the table for it, right? I still think 16, 18, 17 points, that feels like a lot. It's been since 2008, the last time these two teams are ranked. I still think Penn State's better over 60 minutes. They've got too many assets and weapons that I don't think Illinois can match over that time frame. Penn State 34, Illinois 21. My bold prediction is Penn State wins the third down battle in this game. And that's going to be uber critical to me against an Illinois team that I feel makes third down their, they make third down theirs. They own third down and create chaos on third down. That was what they did a lot against Nebraska and made Nebraska uncomfortable. So my bold prediction is Penn State wins the third down battle. Look at third down percentage when the game is over, 34-21. I think there's going to be some points.
I'll tell you what, Andy, similar to you, I have Penn State putting up 34, but I have it 34-14. I do have them covering. I do think they'll get some momentum going. And you bring up the point about third down. It's really easy to say, oh, third down's important. It's important in every game. But I think in this game, you're right, it becomes extra important because that will establish whose style we're going to play.
Right.
If Illinois is able to convert those third downs and keep Penn State off the field, that's how they want to play this game. All right, Andy, that is it for the show. Everyone, enjoy the game on Saturday. Thank you all for listening. Be sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.